Peter B. Collins. News and comment. Hey, thanks for downloading it. It's Wednesday, September 7th, 2016. There's more news than fits in half an hour. Let's see what I can do here. I am standing firmly with the Standing Rock Sioux and the Lakota tribes who have been protesting the efforts to build a pipeline through their sacred lands and recently discovered a sacred tribal burial ground. And over the Labor Day weekend, things heated up as the pipeline company Dakota Access LLC brought in bulldozers, started to dig things up, and they brought in a goon squad with attack dogs, pepper spray, and state police sat idly by as these goons tried to contain protesters and at times allowed the dogs to attack protesters who were not violating any laws that I know of or operating in more than a free speech manner. And in the last couple of days, we've seen a brief court injunction issued by a federal judge in Washington, D.C., but bizarrely, he ruled that construction on the area that's recently been identified as a sacred tribal burial ground may continue. It makes no sense. Now, this area, which is outside of the reservation, so it's on state land or private land, I'm not sure which, was only recently discovered, and there's a process where you apply to the historical society or whatever it's called there in the state of North Dakota, and they come down and say, oh yeah, this is a legitimate site. So there doesn't seem to be some urgency here that requires that this work continue until these issues can be resolved. But the pipeline company seems to be in deep cahoots with the Army Corps of Engineers, which is bulldozing the rights of the Native Americans, both figuratively and literally. So Saturday, Labor Day weekend, on September 3rd, members of the Standing Rock Sioux tribe and their growing numbers of supporters were on their way to blockade an area near the construction site to sing and give prayers, and they heard bulldozers. And so some of the people in a nonviolent protest mode ran to that scene, and that's where they encountered these pipeline security workers, I call them goons, who had attack dogs, used pepper spray on the demonstrators, and at least one child and a pregnant woman were bitten by the security dogs, and 30 reported side effects or effects from the use of the pepper spray on them. Now, local authorities have called it a riot, blaming the protesters and not the security detail, but the Democracy Now! Has video that pretty clearly shows that the protesters stayed within bounds. And a spokesperson for the Red Warrior Camp says the claims of injuries to the security company's personnel are absolutely false. The company says they were hit with objects, which just isn't true. We had no weapons, just our voices. The video doesn't lie. One female security guard laughed and said, "I told you so," when her dog bit one of us. I'm linking to the article that I'm referring to here. It's from DeSmogBlog, and the link is in the show file for today's podcast to make it easy for you to find it. There's some interesting photographs that accompany the report. And the protesters also said they did this on a holiday weekend, one day after we filed court papers identifying these sacred sites. The desecration of these ancient places has already caused the Standing Rock Sioux irreparable harm, and we're asking the court to halt this path of destruction. And some argued that this was an act of psychological warfare on the part of the pipeline construction company. And as I mentioned, the state police were on the scene but took no action to protect the protesters or to stop the private security personnel. And one, an attorney, Stephanie Sosi, with Earth Justice, representing the Native Americans, said, "Since 2014, when the pipeline construction was announced, the tribe has consistently reached out for consultation to the Army Corps of Engineers. But the Corps steamrolled the tribe throughout the process." And we're seeing some interesting support for the people in protest there of the Dakota Pipeline, coming from the music city of Austin, Texas. And I want to thank listener, subscriber, and Peter B. Collins supporter Leland Potter for tipping me off to this, because he and his colleague from the band Choctaw Wildfire, Charlie Pierce, have gotten very active on this issue. And if you haven't checked out Choctaw Wildfire, I'm going to plug them for you. That's not the purpose of mentioning them today. But they are a great band, and Charlie Pierce is a great songwriter with a powerful voice. Check them out on your favorite music service. But the connection to Texas is really fascinating, because the other day on Facebook, Charlie Pierce outed one of the people who is profiting from the construction of this pipeline. His name is Kelsey, K-E-L-C-Y, Kelsey Warren, a Dallas-based pipeline billionaire, and he's also the money man behind a music enterprise. It's called Music Road Records. He's got a recording studio called Cedar Creek, and he puts on a music festival for folkies called the Cherokee Creek Music Festival. And interestingly, he released a CD or a collection recently, I don't know how long ago, of cover songs performed by other people, and all the songs were written by Jackson Browne. So initially, this was making Jackson Browne look linked to a a dirty oil baron there from Texas. And today, Charlie Pierce posted on Facebook this statement from Jackson Browne. "I met Kelsey Warren on one occasion when I played at the Cherokee Creek Music Festival held at his ranch. Later, his company Music Road Records produced an album of my songs. Though I was honored by the tribute and think highly of the versions, which were done by some of my favorite singers and songwriters, I had nothing to do with it or deciding who would be on it. I do not support the Dakota Access Pipeline. I will be donating all the money I've received from this album to date and any money received in the future to the tribes who are opposing the pipeline. I don't know anything about Kelsey Warren's other business as the production of this album went forward. I did not know," he said. "Although as a music publisher, there's no legal way to deny permission to a record company to cover a song that's been previously published, I could have dissuaded artists from appearing on this record had I known. I routinely vet the companies who ask me to perform for them. I do not play for oil interests. I don't play for companies who defile nature or companies who attack demonstrators with trained attack dogs and pepper spray. The list of companies I've denied the use of my music is long. I certainly would not have allowed my songs to be recorded by a record company whose owner's other business does what Energy Transfer Partners is allegedly doing, threatening the water supply and the sacred sites of indigenous people." Well, thank you, Jackson. Thank you, Leland. And thank you, Charlie. I appreciate your support, and I stand with you alongside the Standing Rock Sioux. Meanwhile, here in California, a different federal judge on Tuesday blocked the federal government's Bureau of Land Management from opening more than 1 million acres in Central California to oil drilling because the agency didn't properly explore the potential dangers of fracking. Hooray! A federal judge who gets what Jerry Brown, our governor, doesn't get. And District Judge Michael Fitzgerald sided with environmental lawyers who argued that the Bureau should have addressed the possible impacts of fracking in an environmental impact statement issued as part of this process. Instead, the 1,000-page impact statement mentioned fracking only 3 times and never discussed the controversial practice in any detail. So he ordered the Bureau to go back to the drawing board, and this may only end up delaying the process. But to hear a federal judge raise the issues about fracking and the damage it does to the environment just days after Oklahoma was rocked with a 5.6 Richter scale tremor that has to be caused by fracking. Well, it appears that some minds are finally being fracked open to the dangers posed by that procedure. President Obama, on his final Asian tour as president, made a stop in Laos, and he almost apologized. And I understand the constraints that he feels, and when he has apologized for past U.S. behavior, he gets all beat up by the Republicans. But hey, you're a lame duck, Barack. Go ahead, cut it loose. What he did say was that he acknowledged the suffering and sacrifices on all sides of the conflict. And there are still what are called bombies, bomblets. These are the offspring of cluster bombs. These are the small munitions loaded with ball bearings and other projectiles, some of which are still being found in farmland and other places in Laos today. Now, to his credit, Obama has increased funding for the removal of landmines and undetonated munitions in Laos, and he did, at least in a veiled way, acknowledge the damage that the United States did. You know, I learned from the coverage that we did drop more tons of munitions on Laos than any other square footage or square mileage in the history of warfare. And so I think that this is long overdue. It is quite welcome. I would like the president to have taken a little bit stronger stand. But as I said, I do understand the kinds of restrictions he feels. And the bottom line for me is that there are so many Americans exemplified by the Trump problem today who just believe you never apologize for anything that the United States has done. And we've done a lot of things wrong. And I appreciate that Obama, for all his flaws, and I've enumerated many of them, is willing to step back from the claims of American exceptionalism and at least acknowledge wrongful steps and very, very immoral actions that we have taken in the past. Now, I am dubious about this entire thing I'm about to tell you, and that is that there is a transition plan that has been announced for Syria. It's coming from the High Negotiation Committee, which is an umbrella body representing more than 30 political and military forces seeking to oust Bashar al-Assad from power in Syria. They unveiled a 25-page plan at a meeting in London. Now, there is no idea presented on exactly how we get to the point where this plan could be implemented. I am dubious that any kind of democratic government can be set up in the ashes of the Assad government and the civil war that has gone on there for 5 years. But the most interesting aspect here is that Boris Johnson, who was the Lord Mayor of London, he is now the foreign minister of the new British government, and he rose to this position because he opposed Brexit and the voters went along with him. Now, I have no idea of the depth that Boris Johnson has. I don't know if he's going to make a good foreign minister. They appointed him just to deal with the Brexit issues with the EU and Brussels. But now, in this process, he has changed his position about Russia and about Syria. Because previously, Johnson had been skeptical about supporting the Syrian opposition. He had made comments in support of Russia. And in an article in the Times of London, he wrote today that Russia's seemingly indefensible military efforts in Syria are keeping in power the one man who bears overwhelming responsibility for the civil war. Now, this blueprint, you know, it looks nice on paper. But do you really believe that in the wake of this civil war, that any kind of real democracy is going to surface in Damascus and be able to unify that country? And who are these people in the High Negotiation Committee? And just how high are they? I got a couple of communiques from David Swanson, the estimable activist against war, wanting to share with you that coming up in Washington, D.C. at American University toward the end of September, the 23rd to the 25th, World Without War is going to be holding a conference called No War 2016. It is a two-day conference, and there are a lot of great speakers, Dennis Kucinich, my old pal Harvey Wasserman, Swanson himself. I don't want to leave anybody out, but some great whistleblowers like Tom Drake, John Kiriakou, and Larry Wilkerson, who used to work for Colin Powell. So it's going to be a very interesting conference. I'm going to put up a link. The website is worldbeyondwar.org/nowar2016. And Swanson also sent a piece that he wrote about the current squabble over allowing the former British ambassador to Uzbekistan, whose name is Craig Murray, to enter the United States so he can attend the World Beyond War conference and give the Sam Adams Award for Integrity and Intelligence to CIA torture whistleblower John Kiriakou. And so far, Murray has been denied a visa by the State Department, even though he's from a country where we basically say you get a visa unless we've got some dirt on you. And so Murray is in trouble. Why? Because he exposed the collusion between the United States and Britain and the ugly government in Uzbekistan. And its strong-arm leader just passed away last week. So as a result of exposing the sadistic methods of torture used by Uzbek authorities, he was forced out of the British Foreign Office. And he issued this statement: "I have no criminal record, no connection to drugs or terrorism. I have a return ticket, hotel booking, and sufficient funds. I have a passport from a visa waiver country and have visited the USA frequently during 38 years, never overstayed. The only possible grounds for this refusal of entry clearance are things I have written against neoliberalism, attacks on civil liberties, and neoconservative foreign policy. People at the conference in Washington will now not be able to hear me speak. Plainly, ideas can be dangerous. So much for the land of the free." And I'm linking to this site so that you can sign the petition. Quite a few people signed it in the first 24 hours that it was put up online. Well, today I'm releasing to subscribers a powerful new in-depth interview podcast featuring author Brad Schreiber. And Brad has put together a stunning new book that brings a lot of new details to the 1970s episode of the so-called SLA, the Symbionese Liberation Army. That's the weird group that kidnapped Patty Hearst, demanded a food giveaway program from her wealthy family, and, well, they all got blown up, many of them, in a what was called a shoot-in, not a shoot-out, in Los Angeles in the summer of 1974. And Schreiber reveals new information. Powerful stuff, like, for example, Patty Hearst had not only been visiting Donald DeFries, the leader of the SLA, while he was a prisoner at the Vacaville facility here in California. Somehow she was able to get conjugal visit rights and was having sex with him there. And so many of us never could understand why Patty Hearst was selected to be kidnapped by the SLA. And Schreiber reports it's because she cut off her relationship with Donald DeFries.
And it was Leo Ryan, the Democratic representative from San Mateo, who I met as a kid when I lived in Foster City. It was Leo Ryan who investigated Vacaville, Peter, found out the connection between the behavior modification of the CIA, Colson Westbrook's relationship with DeFries, and the creation of the SLA. And after Patty was sentenced to 7 years, it was Representative Leo Ryan who went to then-President Jimmy Carter and said, look, regardless of Patty Hearst and her personal connection to Donald DeFries, she was not complicit in her kidnapping. This was a blown operation, an intelligence operation, and I think you need to commute her sentence. And Carter looked into it and decided, absolutely right. I've got the documentation in front of me. MK search was going on at Vacaville, and that's why Patty's sentence was reduced to 22 months.
My fascinating fresh interview with Brad Schreiber is available today for subscribers at peterbcollins.com, at TuneIn, at iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker. And you may know that the Peter B. Collins Daily News and Comment podcast is now available on YouTube. We discovered that a lot of people have the YouTube app on your smartphones and devices, and it's an easy way for you to get the podcast. So I'm putting up a link to the temporary site of the Peter B. Collins channel on YouTube. And as soon as we have 100 subscribers, the way YouTube works, they'll let us choose a URL like Peter B. Collins podcast. So That's one of the upgrades that'll be coming shortly. But I encourage you to go to YouTube, follow the link, and just click on their subscription button. They'll send you a notification when there's a new podcast, if you like. And it's just another way to get the same fine podcast that's available on other platforms as well. And I always like to thank people who support my work with your subscriptions, people like the intrepid Carl Howard, Tim McKay, Janet Price, Benny Alto, and his pooches in Oregon. They are all great stalwart supporters. And if you'd like to join them, come on over to peterbcollins.com. It just takes a minute. You click on the menu button, pull down, click on Become a Subscriber. It takes you to the sign-up page and lets you choose $5, $10 a month, $20 a month, whatever's comfortable. And if you sign up for our for our annual $50 subscription, I have one copy of Brad Schreiber's Revolution Ends book that I can give away as a bonus book to the very first person who takes out a new annual subscription, gives me a mailing address in the continental U.S., and says, I want that Patty Hearst book. Okay? So I'd be happy to share that with somebody who is interested in that story from the past. Well, this comes from the dangerous left-wing rag, Fortune magazine. They reveal that a memo has been issued at Goldman Sachs. That's the Wall Street investment bank that paid Hillary Clinton $600,000+ for 3 one-hour speeches. Bernie Sanders made a big deal out of that in the primary campaign. Well, the memo has been circulating, and it instructs the partners of the firm that they are banned from donating to the Donald Trump campaign. And the reason is because Vice Presidential candidate Mike Pence is currently a sitting local, a state or local official. But that doesn't apply to Tim Kaine, who's a member of the United States Senate, or Hillary Clinton, who holds no office at this time. And so the rules do not restrict donations to Clinton Kaine in any way. I think you're going to hear the Donald raising a fuss about that. And there is a kind of warm-up, a pre-season, not debate, but the two candidates, Trump and Clinton, will be sitting for back-to-back interviews on MSDNC tonight. It's called the Commander-in-Chief Forum, and it is somehow sponsored by IAVA. That's Paul Rykofen? I'm sorry, his name just escaped from my my memory here. But Paul Rykoff was the founder of Iraq and Afghanistan Veterans of America. And they are influencing or co-sponsoring this debate. This forum. And it's being called the Commander-in-Chief Forum. We expect the questions to relate to foreign policy and the treatment of our veterans. And I think that's a very worthwhile effort. I'd like to see it in a debate format, though, because it gives us the ability to see some dialogue between the two candidates and get a better sense of the differences in the positions that they hold. But that's the way it's being structured. I don't think MSDNC was allowed to make it a debate because of the rules of the Presidential Debate Commission, which is, of course, a corporate entity that is preventing Jill Stein and the Libertarian candidate Gary Johnson from addressing the American people in the three primetime debates that start at the end of September. Meanwhile, Trump is being accused of pay-to-play, and there's a valid issue here. He gave $25,000 to a group supporting the Attorney General of the state of Florida. Her name is Pam Bondi. At the time that she was considering whether to file suit against Trump University, her group got the $25,000, and she declined to pursue charges against the phony entity called Trump University. Now, this goes back to 2013, and Trump says, oh, she's just a wonderful person. I've never spoken to her about this at all, and, there's no quid, there's no pro, and there's no quo. Well, what's interesting is that Hillary Clinton tried to score some points on this while campaigning in Tampa, Florida yesterday, demanding details of the conversation in which Ms. Bondi solicited Trump's donation. The American people deserve to know what was said, because clearly the Attorney General did not proceed with the investigation. Now, this is a head-scratcher, and it puts Hillary on very thin ice, because she, of course, didn't get investigated or further prosecuted by the FBI director, James Comey. When many people look at that case and say, how could you not proceed? And then there's the case that I referenced just a moment ago of Goldman Sachs. And here's the quote from Hillary: the American people deserve to know what was said. Now, all through the primaries, Bernie Sanders was so polite and saying, I don't care about your damn emails, but I'd like to see the transcripts of those very fine speeches you gave to Goldman Sachs and other banking interests. And so what this points up is the kind of Brazil factor in this campaign. We don't have a clean candidate running. There's no white hat, black hat, good guy, good girl, bad girl. And in the article covering this, the New York Times shows the history of Donald Trump, campaign contributions, and his bragging about how much influence he was able to buy through the exchange of cash with politicians. Nancy Pelosi, House Minority Leader, sent a letter yesterday to the Speaker, Paul Ryan, urging him to bar Republicans from using hacked documents in their campaigns. And Pelosi said that the hack into Democratic servers, apparently by Russians, says this article from the New York Times, was, quote, an unprecedented assault on the sanctity of our democratic process. Democrats and Republicans must present a unified front in the face of Russia's attempts to tamper with the will of the American people. Now, as you may know, I know Nancy Pelosi. I worked on campaigns for her. But frankly, this is unsubstantiated speculation. If you listen to the interview I did, it's been now 3 weeks, with Bill Binney and Kirk Wiebe, the former veterans of the NSA, they agree with NSA expert James Bamford that blaming Russia for this is nonsensical, that if Russia had the hacking tools that the NSA lost or left behind or allowed to be stolen, that they wouldn't reveal that they were the hackers. They would continue to exploit their ability to access those servers. And Hillary Clinton backs this up, told reporters Monday that Russia's intrusion represented a threat from an adversarial force and power, foreign power, and cited credible reports about Russian interference in our elections. They are not credible. This is a Democratic talking point. I mean, even Putin has gone public and said, no, we didn't do it. Now, maybe you don't believe Putin, but I think often people tell the truth about stuff like that. The polls are slipping for Hillary, and let's parse them into two categories. The national polls show that the race is a dead heat. It shows that Hillary's bubble after the convention has evaporated. Trump hasn't really expanded his support much, but she has been declining. Now, when you take it state by state in the battleground states relative to the Electoral College, Clinton still shows a significant advantage, but the margins are shrinking in some very critical states. And this piece showed up at The Hill, which is a reliable organ for inside the Beltway thinkers. And I was a little stunned by it. It reads, can the 2016 election be rigged? You bet. The byline is Roger Stone. Roger Stone. Oh, that Roger Stone. The political dirty trickster who started working for Nixon and was fired by Trump earlier this year. But that doesn't prevent me from telling you that Roger Stone, who is a political provocateur, has a very provocative piece here where he embraces the Stanford University study that shows that the Democrats rigged the primaries in favor of Hillary. He says what was done to Bernie Sanders in Wisconsin is stunning. He says the issue here is voter fraud, which is limited but does happen, and election theft through the manipulation of the computerized voting machines, which does happen. He cites Bob Fetrakis, longtime friend of me in this program, about the strip and flip technique for the elections this year, talks about the hackability of these scanners that tabulate votes. Both parties have engaged in this skullduggery. That's true. And it's the party in power in each state that has custody of the machines and control of their programming. He singles out Rahm Emanuel, asking if he'll put his finger on the scales for the election in Chicago. And so I want you to read this piece, because while it comes from a very unsavory source, most of what it says reflects views that I hold. Now that the Senate is back in session, they're struggling over the same issues that deadlocked before they left in July. And it really bugs me, because the battle over funding for response to the Zika virus is being held up by Republicans who insist on blocking any of that money going to Planned Parenthood for distribution of condoms and other safe sex devices to try to prevent sexual transmission of the Zika virus. And the Democrats are properly rejecting that poison pill. Yes, Planned Parenthood poison pill, you get the pun. But the way this is being covered makes it look like the Democrats are the obstructionists. And they quote Mitch McConnell, that great humanitarian and lover of women. It's hard to explain why, despite all their own calls for funding, Democrats would block plans to keep women and babies safe from Zika. Well, we know why this is going on. But the Democrats are losing the media and rhetorical battle on this issue. And I hope they regain the upper hand before this one is over. And finally today, we say rest in peace to Darren Seals. He was one of the organizers of the protests in Ferguson, Missouri. And last night, he was found shot to death inside a burning vehicle in St. Louis County. I don't have any information or speculation on what led to his death. But he was found about 2 a.m. Tuesday morning in a charred vehicle 10 miles north of downtown St. Louis, and there's no information about a suspect or a possible motive. But this is just tragedy compounded. Thanks for listening to my news and comment podcast, now available free every day on YouTube. I'm Peter B. Collins.
Happy trails to you until we meet again. Happy trails to you. Keep smiling until